find out later what the answer is.
Thank you very much, Helen. Now, we are talking about the science of sound and music this week. We're very pleased to welcome, from the University of York, David Howard. Hello, David.
Good evening.
Thank you for coming down and joining us.
Not at all.
Your research, very interesting, is actually on the voice, something that which we on the radio can't do without.
It certainly is, and of course it's something nobody can do without in this day and age.
So how do you go about studying it?
Well, there are a number of things you can do. I mean, the most obvious thing is you can stick a microphone in front of people and look at the wiggles and try and make some sense of them. But that needs to be done in combination with understanding how we create a sound. What are the key parts of our bodies we use when we create a sound? So one of the things we've been looking at in the past is differences between people who sing or speak. So, for example, we've been looking at choristers in cathedrals to try and establish whether people can tell the difference between them singing and also to try and establish what it is that changes as boys and girls grow older.
So you've given me some samples, so let me invite the audience to participate in a bit of a challenge then. So you've given me two groups of choristers, one all boys, one all girls, singing the same piece of music, and we're going to see if we can get people to tell the difference.
This is correct, but the key thing when you're listening is to realise this is a choir singing, so you need to listen for the top line of the choir.
Okay. So I'll pick one of these at random, so here we go. Any thoughts, Helen?
Just enjoying that. It's rather lovely. I don't know, actually. I think I'm going to need to hear the next one to compare it to. It sounded fairly female to me, I think.
Okay. Shall I play number two then, David?
Yeah, try number two.
Okay. To say, I cannot hear the difference myself, and I've done quite a bit of singing in a lot of cathedrals and choirs and things.
Well, I have to confess that I too have, and listened obviously to many children whilst making these recordings. I find it difficult to tell the difference. If you ask me to tell the difference, I'd struggle.
So if I let the cat out of the bag, the one I played first that you gave me was the boys singing.
It was.
And Helen thought it was girls, and the second one was the girls singing. So does this then put the kibosh on this claim that you have to have all male choirs, and especially all male treble choirs, little boys, because they sound better than girls?
Well, I believe it does, yes. I mean, what we're demonstrating here is that given the same situation, boys and girls can fulfil the role and do a job as good as each other. But it does come from other areas too, because boys have been singing in cathedrals now for over half a millennium, and girls have been singing since 1991. So they haven't got much of a head start in terms of catching up, but this does show that at Wells Cathedral, which is where these recordings were made, actually girls can do the job as well as boys.
And if you feed those recordings into a computer and ask it to build you a profile of what the voices actually look like, does that give you any obvious standout differences between the boys and the girls?
No, it doesn't. Interestingly, our ability to analyse things for the real subtlety of listening, we cannot yet with a computer do as well as our ears.
Which is makes a change, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't.
Not being beaten by a computer.
It doesn't. It's rather nice, I think, that we haven't yet beaten the ear.
OK, well, let's actually zoom in on the business end that's what's doing this, the whole vocal tract. So can you just give us a whistle-stop tour of that and how it works?
Well, very briefly, if you're going to make any sound, you need a source of sound. And for most of what we do when we're speaking, it's the vocal folds, which vibrate inside the larynx. So that lumpy thing on your neck, the Adam's apple at the front, that you can feel with your finger, and if you put your finger on it and swallow, it moves up and down just to show that it's alive and well. There are two muscles in there that vibrate, and they produce a buzz. Now, I've got an electronic version of a buzz here, so this buzz you're about to hear is an electronic larynx.
It's not a shaver, but it sounds
No, no, it might sound like one. Here we go. So that's a buzzing sound, and to prove that this simulates what your or my larynx are doing, I'm now going to tell you my name and use this instead of my normal larynx by placing it against my Adam's apple.
Hello, my name is David Howard.
So how's that working? You're just sending a pulse of sound waves in through your throat and it's hitting your vocal cords. You're not breathing and talking as you would do normally. You're just moving your voice box as though you were going to.
That's correct. The way you use this is to hold your breath. So you take a breath and go as if you're going to lift a heavy weight, which closes the vocal folds, jams them together so that you can build up pressure in the lungs just to support yourself. But it also means that when you put the buzz in, it then stimulates the cavities above in the normal way. And the key to speaking is that we have two things available to us. We've got a buzz and we've got a tube. And this tube is a squidgy tube which goes from the larynx to the lips, the mouth tube. Mm. And, of course, when we're talking, we're moving our jaw, tongue, lips. And that changes the shape of the tube and therefore changes the acoustic characteristics of that tube.
So can you model that? If you take measurements from somebody and record over time, can you build up a sort of profile of what their throat looks like so it's possible to recreate their voice almost?
You can, and this is something we're now doing. This is looking at how can we electronically synthesise a natural-sounding human, starting with the real tube shape of a human being. So you put them into a magnetic resonance imaging machine, and if you do that and characterise the tube, I have in front of me two acrylic tubes. This one is shaped like the vowel R. It's 17.5 centimetres long, and it sounds like this if I put the buzzer in the end.
So how does that work? How are you producing that particular sound?
Well, the way the sound is produced is because the tube itself has an internal shape which is modelled on a real human mouth.
Saying R.
Saying R. So if you imagine saying R, you open the jaw. So if you contrast R with E, E has a closed jaw, R has an open jaw. And I also have a tube for E, which is the E shape, sounds like this. And what's
it
elegant?
Like you went down at the end a bit, though.
Well,
getting tired or something.
The pitch goes down because the buzz goes down. But the key thing is that the shapes are producing R and E. And what I like to remind singers, if we're talking, you know, to singers, is that all you have to sing with is a buzz and a tube that's about 17.5 centimetres long, which is all squidgy. And that's it.
Well, let's look at something which, I mean, some people who make their money from the voice are people who take the rip out of other people and sound like people. So how are they doing that? Because that all comes down to the same business, I suppose, as to why we have accents. And I know we're now going to get a flurry of 5 million emails because people love the subject of accents. But why do I sound English, Helen sounds English, yet a lot of people on the other side of the Atlantic have their own distinct way of sounding?
Well, it's we have the basic human speech production apparatus. We all have the same larynx and a tube above it. But culturally, depending on where we're brought up and what the first sounds are we hear when we're very young, that begins to determine what we're going to sound like when we speak and indeed sing and indeed make music. So if you're trying to imitate, if you're a professional imitator, like, for example, Rory Bremner, he will take a voice and he will try and imitate that voice, but he's got a fundamental problem, and the fundamental problem is that he's got to do it with his tube and apparatus, and he will not have the same tube as the person he's trying to imitate.
Now, you spent some time with, actually, Rory Bremner, the BBC. He's often on telly, isn't he, doing this? And he was taking the rip out of Tony Blair. So you've given me a lump of Tony Blair. So here's our good old friend Tony.
It's not the consequence of foreign policy. It is an attack on our way of life.
Everyone remembers that speech very well, don't they? And here's Rory Bremner doing Tony Blair.
It's not the consequence of foreign policy. It is an attack on our way of life.
Now, what's really interesting is I can tell that's not Tony Blair, but at the same time, it does sound dramatically like him.
It does. The acoustics are different in both cases. Tony's was in a big hall and it sounds like a speech. Rory's was in a quiet studio. But he will never produce exactly the same acoustic signature. And he can't because of the shape of his own tubes are different to Tony Blair's.
So why is he fooling me to a certain extent then? Why do I know who that is instantly?
Yes, well, the key thing he seems to be doing is latching on to some key acoustic characteristics that change when Tony Blair speaks in the way that Tony Blair does it. So they're kind of his acoustic mannerisms that he uses when he speaks. And what Rory's doing is picking those up, rather like your caricature artist might draw a cartoon, big nose, and you know who it is, even though the actual picture is a sort of circle, two dots and a big nose.
Well, thank you very much, David Howard from the University of York. You've given me one more sample, and we'll see if anyone can recognise who this is. I don't think you'll have too much problem.
We didn't cause it. It's not the consequence of foreign policy. It's an attack on our way of life.
You're not going to get any clues, because I think that's pretty obvious. But that was actually Rory Bremner imitating that particular and well-known famous actor. It is The Naked Scientist with Chris Smith, Helen Scales. We're talking about the science of music and sound this week. On the way, we'll be finding out why it is that some sounds are intolerable whilst others are really enjoyable and how they actually influence your brain, and also the cultural basis of music. Why do we like music so much and how does it influence the way we behave? If you'd like to join in or ask us any questions, email chris@thenakedscientist.com.
Fancy listening to The Naked Scientists in your bed, on your way to work, or even at work? Why not subscribe to our podcast? For more information, visit nakedscientists.com/podcast.